Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
That's all right, so hopefully everyone has all the sheets so far, handed out so far. Okay, excellent. And I do want to apologize. I had not been very good about posting. I got off track, and then I have to count the number of shiurim again so that the person in charge of the website doesn't yell at me. So, Lee Netter, I hope by tomorrow, Wednesday, I'll have the shiurim posted. I did, as I mentioned last time, I did accidentally erase one 3 weeks ago. I'm still recovering from that. So I hope either, maybe I'll just give it, you know, talking to the tape recorder type of thing, or, but there are two that I've not posted. There's two that I've not posted, and tonight will be the third. I hope to get those up shortly. Okay, so if I'm not mistaken, we finished Bayes last time, Zareya. Okay, that matches everyone's notes, which brings us to Melacha Gimel, the third Melacha, which is Kotzer. Kotzer we translated as reaping. And the definition is uprooting any part of a plant, of a living plant, rather, any part of a living plant from its source of growth. So again, uprooting any part of a living plant from its source of growth. Uprooting any part of a living plant from its source of growth. So, clearly a flower, for example, which has already been cut flowers by a Kroger, by a Costco, removing a petal from that, for example, would not be the Melacha of Kotzer. It's no longer growing, it's no longer getting its nourishment from the ground. That would not be Kotzer. Okay, so... The first concept, before we get into some applications, is using a tree. This is actually a shvus. This is a rule from the rabbis. We discussed in the beginning, a shvus is a negative from the rabbis. The rabbis say, don't do something. So using a tree is a prohibition from the rabbis. It is a shvus. And the rabbis said, you cannot use trees, not just trees, but really anything that's still connected to the ground cannot be used, and we'll see some examples on the bottom here, cannot be used on Shabbos. Indirectly using a tree, on the other hand, is actually permissible. There's no prohibition against that. And again, we'll talk about some examples momentarily. So, as far as concepts go, as a preface to applications, using a tree is prohibited. Now, I'm not talking about ripping from a tree. Ripping from the tree is a real McCoy. It's a real deal. That's a biblical prohibition. But using a tree in any way is rabbinically prohibited. It's a shvus. And indirectly using a tree is not prohibited. It's perfectly fine. Now, let's do some applications here. Picking fruits or flowers is certainly a classic example of the biblical prohibition of Kotzer. So under applications, the first one you got there is picking fruit, picking flowers, any of that kind of stuff would be the biblical prohibition of this Melacha of Kotzer and is biblically prohibited on Shabbos. Kicking petals, you'll notice my little typo there. Kicking petals on a flower, not riding your bike, but petals I'm talking about with a flower, that would similarly be prohibited on Shabbos, because I'm talking about dandelions, I'm talking about flowers that are still connected to the ground, they're still growing out of your lawn. So kicking those petals, certainly on purpose, would be a violation of Kotzer.
So it's a minyan of...
What's that? Kicking or picking?
Well,
yes.
Two different things. You couldn't even kick a petal that
right.
On the ground?
Well, if it's connected to the ground.
Like a dandelion.
Oh, no, like a dandelion is a great example.
Like a petal,
yeah, no problem.
So if it's a minyan of intent, though, if you're walking through the grass and there happens to be a dandelion.
Right. Excellent point. We'll touch on that a little bit in a second. But yes, that's a very good point. If you happen to be walking through and you happen, that's a non-issue.
Okay. Is it biblical or rabbinical?
Kicking it on purpose, that's a good question. The operative issue here, is that a normal way of separating? The answer is probably no. It's strange. It's, if you go back to our concepts in the beginning, it's kilachayat or shinoi or whatever word we use. I think we use both. So that would probably be rabbinic. That's true. That's true. That would probably be rabbinic application of kotzer, kicking petals. What other malacha could one violate if, for example, you kick a dandelion? What other malacha? Spreading, right, which would be the malacha we just learned before of planting, of zareah. Exactly. In one fell swoop, you're really doing two malachas in that case. If it's something like a dandelion, which those petals are the seed itself, so then, interestingly enough, you're doing kotzer, which typically we associate with killing the thing, with just detaching it and uprooting it. But you're also at the same time potentially doing zareah. You're also planting the next dandelion. So it's just interesting to point out that you can do more than one malacha with one act. Kumar makes that point.
Laura asked if you go inadvertently, if you're just walking.
Right. So inadvertently, it totally happenstance. That would be a misasik concept we learned a while ago. And misasik would not be an issue at all. It's a non-issue. It was similar to the case we discussed of you're walking on the sidewalk and you happen to smush an ant. It's not shogeg, it's not maize, it's really nothing. Then you get into, if you're walking through and there's a dandelion,
there's
a whole field of them, what do you do then? Maybe walk carefully and you're pushing down instead of kicking. I don't know exactly. But, the typical case, it happens to be one there. There's really no, it's just a misasik. It's just, you walk in your merry way and it happens to be there. That's a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
Question?
I don't know if this is going to be in a different category.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, when the Chabad family, we weren't too much out of the time, they invited us for Shabbos dinner, and I brought flowers.
Mm-hmm.
I was forgetting to ask their house. She didn't want to touch them. Is
right.
The
this was cut flowers, not potted flowers. So we touched on this last week. Cut flowers would actually not be muksa. One is not allowed to put them in water on Shabbos for a variety of reasons. But just to put them, our suggestion last week was to just take the cover off and put them in dry, which you and I normally wouldn't do. But on Shabbos, that's the proper procedure. I mean, it could be, if driving was involved, that could be a separate issue of benefiting from. That could be the issue, right? Not wanting to benefit from. From Chil Shabbos, but just flowers. Actually, putting in, just putting in a vase is really not an issue.
She had me put them in the thing, not her.
Right, right. Could be she didn't want to benefit in any way from.
They're still in the same place. She didn't want to put them in. That would still not be benefiting from it.
I don't know. I guess she didn't want to direct. I don't know.
I'm just curious, not because I'm like
right.
criticizing. I just
right.
Still thinking about what I did wrong.
We've all been there. Myself, and most of us have been there in some way, shape, or form. Okay, so walking barefoot on tall grass, not something you and I necessarily do on a regular basis, but this is an example of the Gemara. And this speaks very much to that issue of whether you're doing something on purpose. The Gemara says that is a non-issue, despite the fact that you might be pulling up that grass between your toes. The grass might be uprooted. That's not, again, that's misasik. You're not doing it on purpose. It's just something that happens as you're going on your way. That is perfectly perfectly fine. Doing it, uprooting anything on purpose certainly would be prohibited. As was pointed out before, if you do it in a strange way, it would be only rabbinically prohibited. But just walking through is not a problem at all.
Same goes if you're taking the shortcut through wooded area.
Yeah, and something gets uprooted that way, it's not a non-issue. As long as you're not intending it to happen and benefiting it from it in any way. So again, I want to point out, this is a great opportunity to point out again, the malach is happening, right? From an objective perspective, the same result is happening. This grass, weed, whatever, flower is no longer connected to the ground. It was, moments ago. That's not prohibited. We always have to, to realign our thinking to think in legal terms, what does the halacha require of us, and what does the halacha prohibit and what does halacha allow. So which you know, very often is more lenient than we might have otherwise thought. Okay, this is an interesting example. I don't know if all poskim agree with this, but it's certainly mentioned in poskim, and that is taking your fish out of water, taking Goldie out of the fish bowl is, according to some poskim, a problem of kotzer, believe it or not, because although it doesn't fit our strict definition of a plant or a living creature, but it's considered you're detaching it from its source of life, and therefore is a potential problem of kotzer. Again, I don't know necessarily that all poskim agree with this, but you know, as an aside, fishy is muksa. I don't know if we gave this example. I think we did talk about pets.
Yeah.
When we discussed muksa. Pets are muksa. So that changing the fishbowl on Shabbos is out anyway, because you can't transferring the fish would be a prohibition of muksa.
But didn't you say it was only muksa if you moved the animal?
Yes. So I'm saying in this case, you use the...
Right.
I mean,
if your cat or dog come and lay on top of
that's
you...
That's fine, right. Right. They're lying on your lap, you get up and they jump off, that's fine.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So many Orthodox people don't have animals?
That's a good question.
We can't hear it though. I'm sorry. I just noticed that there are so many Orthodox people that don't have animals, and I was wondering if that...
Don't have pets.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the main reason is probably, right, because there's enough going around already without having to take the dog to the vet. That's very often, whereas in Manhattan, I think there's more dogs per capita than there's, you know, because, let's face it, family, you know, singles and companionship. So that's probably one of the reasons. There's certainly Rabbi Wein, for example, famous Rabbi Bera Wein, talks about, I think it was his father, or his grandfather, was a Rav in Lita, that's his grandfather, and the norm, as part of the rabbi's salary, was a goat, because that's, you know, the goat milk, and that was part of what the community provided for their rabbi, was a goat to provide milk for the rabbi's family. So, it goes without saying, I think, that people had farms, people had animals all over the place. We live in the way we live, so we don't, I suspect that's the main reason, is just there's too much going on already.
Okay.
Despite the many benefits. Moradina at the end of Camp Shemayim typically gives out a goldfish. And we have in the past sometimes taken it and sometimes said thank you, but we notoriously kill our goldfish. But I think that's the main reason. Okay. Sitting on a tree stump. So this goes back to what we mentioned in the concepts a few minutes ago. So sitting on a tree stump would be an example, a potential problem of using something which is still connected to the ground. And I should have mentioned earlier, you can put this under concepts, ladies. Just go to back up a little bit. Using a tree is rabbinically prohibited, we said, as a shvus, because Chazal didn't want us climbing trees and using trees in whatever way, because that typically leads to pulling things off of the tree. Right, if you're in the treehouse, or
so
if you're in
together,
the
really.
So it's again, it's a siyug. It's your classic rabbinic offense around the biblical. Say again. So using now, I'm confusing you all by going out of order here. Going back to concepts, using a tree. We're talking about the first item here. We said was rabbinically prohibited, and I did not give you the reason. The reason is because the rabbis say don't do that because you might come to do this. Don't use the tree in any way, because then you might end up doing what a lot of us, I think, would do, which is ripping branches, ripping leaves, all that kind of stuff off of the tree. So just hands off. Don't deal. Whereas if it's indirect already, you know, the rabbis say, we're not going to go so far. I'll give you an example of that momentarily. So sitting on a tree stump would be prohibited. This would be rabbinically prohibited unless the tree stump is already low enough to the ground to be considered part of the ground. So they cut the tree down, and you didn't bother getting the stump grinder out there, so that would be fine. There's no prohibition of sitting on the ground.
Stump is possessive.
What's that?
Stump is possessive.
It is, well, I've seen, you know, little trees grow out of the, I'm not sure it's always completely dead. But certainly if it's low enough to be considered part of the ground, it's okay to sit on that Some, the halacha there, let me just finish this piece and I'll take questions. The halacha there, ladies, is if it's less than 3 tefachim. 3 tefachim. You're all very familiar, I'm sure, with tefachim. 3 tefachim, yeah, that's not a term we use very often. But a tefach is a fifth. 3 fifths. 3 fifths high. 1, 2, 3, let's say about 9 inches or so off the ground would be, if it's less than that, it's considered part of the ground. You can sit on that stump. If it's higher than that, then it's already, it's still considered a tree, and one, rabbinically speaking, would not be allowed to sit on that stump.
So, like, suppose you're walking on some shore, and it's a very hot day.
Right.
And you need to sit down.
Right.
And there's a stump.
Right. So, you know, you can certainly, you know, you don't have to walk around with your tefach yardstick. They do make them, actually. You don't have to walk around with that, your tape measure, and start figuring out, is it 9 inches, is it 9.5 inches? If it looks low enough to the ground, you can certainly use it. And certainly non-organic is obviously is fine. You know, bricks or rocks or whatever, the little... I remember not that long ago I saw Mr. Hiller sitting, you know, he was walking home from shul with his son, with Rabbi Hiller, and he's sitting on, if you're familiar with Jody Lane, you know, they put in the sidewalk a few years ago, and they also put in some brick wall, you know, retaining wall type of thing. So, you know, just thinking as I was passing by Shabbos and saw him resting there, that you know, they thought they put it in for aesthetics, for whatever. They really put it in so Mr. Hiller can walk the shul. That's really that, why it's on a spiritual level, at least, why it's there. Allison, do you have a question?
I was saying, in front of Mormon, there's a little tree that hits my jump up and down on that tree.
I can't think of which trunk you're talking about. It would very much depend.
Right.
That's the tree that fell on the house?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So that would depend. I have to take a look next week. If it's high enough, if it's over 9 inches, then we got a problem. I have to tell. It's a tree tree?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a problem. Yeah. It's not?
But depending on the age. Right.
Crossbones, skull and crossbones. So again, it's a stump of the tree that fell before it fell, or
it's a tree
tree. Oh, tree
tree.
Oh.
Oh.
No. Can't do that. No, you cannot climb trees on Shabbos. That is, you know, a favorite pastime of boys, but that's no. Can't do that. Can't say I've ever noticed. Okay.
It's also the kids that are
under a certain age.
Right. They're still not, you know,
right.
They're still learning.
Right. So that then the question, of course, becomes, and it's a case by case decision. At what point do you tell a kid, you know,
you really shouldn't be,
can't do that?
Yeah.
It's not a simple question. Obviously, depends very much on the kid. Okay. Now, the next item, ladies, is sitting on the grass. This is actually totally permissible, no problem at all. I remember years ago, before I really knew my Hilchos Shabbos well, I must have been 18, I was in Israel, and we were doing a Shabbaton with Israeli kids. And we were doing a game of some sort, and we were all sitting on the ground. And the favorite pastime, of course, when you're sitting on the grass, is to start
pulling it
on the grass and throwing it at the person next to you. So it dawned on me then that it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if I articulated it this way, but it's interesting that it's not prohibited because it is very tempting.
Kind of like the sandbox. You know, we were talking about.
Right.
It's okay. It's allowed, but not encouraged.
Like, right. There could be some issues there.
Right.
Right. That's true. And it is interesting, you know, where did the rabbis step in and make things actually prohibited? And where do they leave it up to our discretion? Where maybe if it's a tempting situation for ourselves, certainly that's something we should personally avoid, even though We're not allowed to make up new rabbinic rules. Generally, even, you know, it's just generally not done. I mentioned an example, an exception of Rabbi Feinstein with the timers is kind of an exception. But generally speaking, we don't do it. But certainly your own senses make sense. You know, if you feel in your own life, in whatever area, you know, one should not go there. But it's certainly not prohibited. Okay, now smelling flowers and smelling fruit, the next two items. This is interesting and sometimes confusing. Smelling flowers, we're talking about flowers still in the ground. Still in the ground. Certainly smelling, you know, the Costco flowers on your table is perfectly fine. Again, they're not muksa. They're movable. You can smell them all you want. You can't do the water. But smelling flowers that are connected to the ground is actually permissible. Whereas smelling fruit connected to a tree, fruit tree, remember walking in L.A. on Shabbos, and this is more common there certainly than it is here, is actually prohibited. Not allowed to smell the oranges or whatever. And the reason, exactly. The reason for that is Chazal felt that it's much more likely you'd pick the fruit than pick the flower. And therefore, we're not allowed to smell the fruit while connected to the ground because one could be then tempted to, if orange smells good, I'm going to pluck it off the tree. What's that?
This is rabbinic.
This is rabbinic, yes. This is also rabbinic. Smelling flowers is permissible, actually. The rabbis did not go that far. So smelling flowers is okay. Smelling fruit is not. And I think it's just an interesting, sometimes confusing, that's an interesting distinction between the two.
No, because, I mean, you're really much more likely, if you have a piece of fruit, and, oh, it looks so good, and you smell it, and it's like, whoa, this smells really good, so you're going to be more inclined to pick it, and then maybe eat it.
Mm-hmm. See, and we live in a world where maybe today it would be the opposite. We'd be more, like the fruit, you know, we don't know, is it poisonous, is it not poisonous, you know, all the questions come to your head. Whereas it's a flower, you know, we're all city folk, we don't know what we're doing, so. But one suspects, you know, more agriculturally based society, that was very true. Okay, and then a couple of things just to add, either the bottom or on the back. Probably not going to have room on the bottom. But one is a hammock. Hammock also is a classic case, which I was remiss in not putting on the sheet. A hammock gets a little confusing. So a hammock tied, all the halakha books have this picture. I suspect it's in the picture book also. I'm pretty sure it is. A hammock tied around the tree, one is not allowed to use in Shabbos because that is considered directly using a tree. And we said already that is a rabbinic prohibition on Shabbos, because we're concerned, even though in our mind, you know, what do you mean? Nothing's going to happen here. But the rabbis forbade us to use trees directly. So lying in that hammock is, or swing, or anything like that, is directly hanging on the tree, you know, tire swings, would be a problem. Whereas, and again, I think there's both pictures in there, if the hammock is tied to some kind of, stand for sure, meaning a stand is totally independent of trees. Thank you for pointing that out. That would be fine. But even if the hammock is on the tree, but there is a nail in the tree, or there's some other kind of
a hook
or accessory, whatever it is, that's on the tree, and then the hammock is connected to that accessory, that is actually permissible. That's considered distant enough that is permissible. And I see top right there. That one's connected to hooks, right?
Right.
And there's a little green guy saying it's okay. Yeah.
But in a way I can understand it too, because if you're in a hammock that's attached directly to the tree and you're swinging back and forth, you're going to cause the tree to abrade.
That's true also. The bark might start coming out.
So arrow flying cannot be connected to the tree. The arrow line,
that's a great question. No, that actually would be permissible. We don't consider that using, it's a great question. We don't consider that using, meaning we are using it, but we're not interacting with it. We're not,
But it's set up before Shabbos.
Right, it's set up before and you're not, I mean, on one hand you're benefiting from it, but it's an interesting question. What really is the difference between the two? I've never thought about that.
But you're not actively benefiting.
You're not directly engaging with it.
Right.
I think that's the answer.
Yeah.
The hammock on the on the tree, you're actually
directly
touching it and affecting.
Right. You're indirectly touching the tree.
Yeah, and you're affecting any damage or any whatever
that
might happen.
Right.
I think that's the answer. I mean, the concern here is kosher. The concern is you might come, if you're interacting with the hammock, you might come to pull something off of the tree. As remote as that seems to us, you know, in our world. Whereas the air, you're not really interacting with, you're benefiting from it certainly, if you're not interacting with it. So that actually would be perfectly fine. And very often, in cities typically, they don't use trees. Trees are not that, but
these poles
or fences or whatever. But certainly, I remember doing a Shabbaton a few years ago at a state park, and we used trees. It's definitely what we, it's best, you know, they are your friends. Okay, and then, I also want to point out, and again, you're going to have to use the back for this, ladies. I mentioned a while ago that there's certain melachos which are sisters, which are mirrors of each other. And some examples were tying and untying, which we'll get to. That's a really good example. Soster and Bona, not so much. Alright, let's leave it with tying and untying. When we talk about tying, we'll spend some time, some significant time on that melacha. When we get to untying, there's really little to say, because it's whatever you're not allowed to do here, not allowed to undo there. They're really almost a mirror. Whereas here, I want to point out that's not the case. Zoreya and Kotzer, on the surface, one could view as sister melachos. One is promoting growth of Zoreya, that's number two. And here, number three is Kotzer, is detaching, is severing from the source of growth. And while that's true, there's certain contrast here, but in halacha, there's really no halachic, that mirror does not exist. So, for example, closing the blinds so that the sun doesn't shine on the plant, or shutting the faucet so that the water no longer is dripping on a plant, for example, is not considered kotzer. Kotzer is strictly uprooting it from its source, but removing, I don't know, fertilizer somehow dripping on the plant, and you shut off the fertilizer, you know, whatever, apparatus, that would not be considered kosher. So just to point out, even though, again, conceptually, and if you were learning them the same day, maybe this would have dawned on us more obviously, but kosher is not a sister malacha of Zareya in the same sense as other malachas are. Which comes to the question of a sprinkler system. Can you just shut off the sprinkler? The theoretical answer is yes, because again, it's not considered kosher. Stopping liquid water from watering the plant is not, certainly would be a prohibition of Zoreya. Going to the faucet, turning it on Shabbos would, yes, be Zoreya, but shutting it off is not kosher. The technical problem there is that when you shut down a sprinkler system, it tends to water areas that it wasn't watering before. The stream gets less and less, and tends to water areas which are not as, could be dry or not as wet. So there's a practical problem there. But just conceptually at least, again, Kotzer and Zoreya are not sisters. And as I said last time, putting a sprinkler system on timer would not be a problem. Zoreya is not a problem. Kotzer, the only issue really would be the timer issue. The Ramosha Feinstein's
issue.
So there you get into Ramosha Feinstein. Ramosha Feinstein issued a ruling that he doesn't want people using timers on, even setting them up before, to be used on Shabbos except for lights. Because he didn't want Shabbos to become, the whole house be timer driven. The question then becomes, do you accept that ruling? I don't want to make it just sound like it's monolithic, it's just Ramosha Feinstein, but, it boils down to, do you accept that approach or not? And many Jews certainly do try to avoid using, we're not certainly encouraging of wiring the whole house and let's, Bill Gates the whole house and see what we can get away with. That's a good question. I'd have to look up the tshuva and see what his reason is.
Would it have to do with Shalom Bayis stuff?
That could well be. That Shalom Bayis, meaning you're referring to Friday night candles, for example, is a rule the rabbis made. So the assumption being is a whole different world we live in today. But the assumption being, if you had a candle burning for 2 or 3 hours Friday night, you'd eat your meal, you'd go to bed, and no one would. The Gemara says that everyone starts bumping into furniture. It doesn't exactly lead to good, shalom bayis. Everyone's nursing their messed up toes. that leads to bad moods and to falling over each other and all that. So candles are very much shalom bayis. So maybe along the same lines, he said that it's okay in our world to... But I have to look that up. Yeah. And he said it decades ago. I mean, like, I suspect he knew, you know, this is the technology would get to the point. I mean, literally, you can have cars running, you can have, you can have anything.
Well, I mean, they're talking about now, just recently, I heard on NPR,
mm-hmm.
that they are getting more and more towards interactive houses.
Right.
Where
I heard that.
Many things within the house will be voice activated. And then you're getting into a whole complicated issue.
Very. Yes.
You know.
You can, I mean, if you wanted to, you can, yeah, you can wire the whole house.
Setting a timer for something like a shalom pot
mm-hmm.
before Shabbat, that would go off.
After lunch, let's say.
At what? Right.
Right. So that's typically done, yes. Posting discussed that quite a bit. If you can put a hot plate on and then put the food on it while it's night. We'll get to the visual. But, you know, that's discussed quite openly, quite regularly. But, yeah, that's the question. How far do we take this avoidance of using timers? So, I said last time, I don't think most Shomer Shabbos are as strict as Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote and envisioned it. At the same time, I think it's anchored us, you know, if we're going too far down that slippery slope.
But to me, that's part of that is a Shabbos preparation in its way ahead of time. It's
mm-hmm.
also conserving. I mean, it's not doing anything that's not in the spirit.
Right.
You know, you're providing food for the seuda.
Right. Yeah, I haven't looked into this.
You can look at it a lot of different ways.
Absolutely. I have not looked into this extensively, but I suspect Poskim since then have said that very point, that you know, this is part of a 3-day Yom Tov. Why should you have everything on for 3 days? You know, that type of thing. And it's part of the Onig Shabbos. You know, it's safer to have it off. Why should the kids, you know, be exposed? There's a bunch of reasons why. It's not extraneous. You know, no one's talking about having music going on. You know, extraneous, clearly non-Shabbos stuff. Right, no one would do that. Right.
That to me violates, in my opinion, for me, it violates.
Right. It's interesting that when I, you know, I started becoming Shomer Shabbos in high school, I was 13, 14, around my bar mitzvahs when I started, so the Friday night lineup to me was a big deal. Whatever it was back then, whatever it was in my world in the early 80s. So I put the TV on a timer. I wasn't going to turn it on or off, but I wanted to watch it. So thank God I grew out of that. But, that's certainly not something we would do on a regular basis, but okay. Any questions about that malacha before we move on? Yes, ma'am.
I have a question about the tree. Are you allowed to just set up the leaf against the tree?
Good question. No.
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 Okay.
Using a tree in any way like that would be directly leaning up against the tree. Would be out.
But you could sit on the yeah. ground and take advantage of the shade of the tree.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Good question, yeah.
So that's indirectly using this.
Indirectly, well, a classic case in our world would be like the hammock on a peg, on a nail.
Okay.
It's hard to think of a lot of practical examples because we just don't use trees.
Right.
I mean, shade. Yeah, that's a good example. Shade is certainly, yeah. No problem at all.
So you know that if you want to do a peg and in order to
that's a good question. I mean, certainly you shouldn't hurt yourself. Right. Yeah, certainly the halacha does not to violate a rabbinic like a shvuah. It's one of these rules to help prevent yourself from getting hurt. It's certainly fine. Yeah, and let's face it, our gut reaction is going to be grab whatever's there anyway. you know, it's just going to be your reflex. But yes, this is certainly not a biblical prohibition that one, you know, has to be life or limb before violating. That's not what this is. Okay, any other questions in coat there? No. Okay, Ma'amer, also not a tremendously practical malacha. We'll just go through this kind of quickly. The translation again is gathering. And the definition, ladies, is collecting or combining anything that grows from the ground while it is still on the ground. So again, collecting or combining anything that grows from the ground while it is still on the ground. So one more time, collecting or combining anything that grows from the ground while it is still on the ground. And as always, examples will help crystallize this idea. So the first point under concepts, applications, is collecting includes sweeping or kicking, rolling, raking, so again, sweeping, kicking, rolling, raking, okay, we'll leave it at that. So this would include fruit, this would include leaves, this would include really anything organic while it's still outside, bringing that together in any way. This is part of the harvesting process in the sense that we cut the, in our case at least, they would cut the wheat and then they would bundle the wheat, gather it together and bundle it together. That's classic ma'amir. So doing anything, even if it's just collecting, before you get to the combining stage, just collecting it. So you know, most relevant to us would be raking leaves, raking sticks, that kind of stuff. That would all be prohibited on Shabbos under this rule of ma'amir. Now, combining would be putting these types of things in a box, in a bucket, stringing fruits together, which you and I don't do on a regular basis, but stringing figs or you know that kind of thing would be prohibited. Pressing them together, and you buy like a fig wheel, whatever they call that. Anything that brings, that combines these types of things, again, organic material in the area where they grew, or where they could have grown, is prohibited under ma'amir.
Does that mean that collecting leaves in a pile would also prohibit?
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
So picking an apple that has fallen already?
So if the apple fell off the tree, that's exactly the, thank you for that segue for the next point, which is one at a time. Simply picking something off of the ground is actually, that's fine, that's permissible. As long as you knew, going back to muksa, and again this is one of the many examples, and one of the many reasons we discussed muksa first, if that apple fell Thursday, Friday afternoon, you knew that apple was not attached when Shabbos hit. So there's no migo, the apple is not muksa. Apple sitting on the ground. And you want to go out Friday, Shabbos morning, and pick up that apple, that's perfectly fine, as long as you're just picking up that apple. So it's not part of, the distinction being made here is, are you harvesting? Are you bringing in five apples in a Kroger bag? That would be prohibited under ma'amir as part of the harvesting process. Whereas if you happen to see the orange, you have an orange tree in your backyard, and you want to go out and get one orange Shabbos morning that you knew has been lying there since Wednesday, that's fine. That's perfectly fine.
So if it's Friday night and Shabbos, you cannot pick it up.
If it fell Friday night, right, that would be most of the whole Shabbos. Yeah. So ma'amir is not the issue if you're just going to get that one, but it would be muksa. And as I think we touched on this also, if you're not sure when it fell, it would also be muksa. Suffic muksa, questionable muksa is considered muksa.
So if leaves been in a backyard for a couple of weeks.
Say again?
If leaves were laying in the backyard for a couple of weeks, mm-hmm. Is it possible to raise them on Shabbos?
So no, so it wouldn't be a problem with muksa in that case.
One leaf.
But right, one leaf. And the leaf would have to be, see leaves. Well, I should, you know, let's backtrack here. Leaves is very, you know, I'm contrasting it to oranges or apples. Leaves are considered muksa category C. They have no purpose. Whereas a fruit is, you know, has a very clear purpose. So a leaf will be muksa anyway. So yes, under the rules of ma'amer, you could pick up, for example, one leaf. But under the rules of muksa, you can't. So leaves really are hands off. Again, you're walking on them outside, you happen to kick them, that's not a problem. But to specifically go out and to gather those leaves would be ma'amer and a muksa problem. So only to pick up one leaf would not be ma'amer, but would be a muksa problem. Leaves, rocks, you know, sticks, all that kind of stuff we discussed in muksa, category C. Okay, so, you know, if we want to bring, it gets very cumbersome, we wouldn't really necessarily do this, but you saw a bunch of apples, you want to go out and get one, bring it in, and go get another one. That would also be, as long as it's clearly not harvesting. You're not harvesting, you're not gathering, you're not putting in a bucket, you're not, like you go to one of these strawberry picking places or apple picking, you know, walk around with a little bucket and you collect and you pay and, you know, that's also. That you can't certainly harvest it, which would be kotzer, and even if it's already harvested, you can't gather it. Okay. The next point, ladies, fruit sticks, leaves outside on the ground. The point here is, even if it's two different things, three different things, four different things, gathering it would still be a problem. So you take one grapefruit, and one orange, one apple, not something you and I would regularly do, but that would be, that's also prohibited. It's not limited just to, you know, classic harvesting of one crop. And it would even be prohibitive with multiple things. So it's really limited to getting one fruit that's not muksa and enjoying it. Now, a little more practically, the last point here, and that is fruit in the house. You bought apples at Kroger, you went to the farmer's market, and the bag of apples breaks, and there's fruit all over your floor. That is not ma'amer. That's perfectly fine, perfectly permissible.
It's not outside.
Exactly. Once it's indoors, once it's on a floor that's not, nothing's growing, that's not ma'amer. That's clearly not part of the harvesting process.
It's still in the process of ripening?
Yes. Good question. Yes. Even if it's not fully ripe, the bananas are green or whatever, that's not a problem. Because the place where you're in is not, it didn't grow there, it can't grow there, it's nothing to do with harvesting. That is an important distinction, which, you know, for all intents and purposes, is what we do in our world. Okay, we already talked about muksa. Okay, so unless there's questions, yeah, that's it for ma'amer. Any questions on ma'amer, ladies? No. Okay. Very good.
What if you put a blanket, like let's say you want to go sit out in the grass? In your backyard,
mm-hmm.
and you spread a blanket over the grass.
Right.
Is that an issue?
No problem.
Because, I mean, what if it kills the grass that you're sitting on? Or damages the grass.
Can we hear
the
question?
Yes, I'm sorry. Let me repeat the question. Yes, thank you. The question was spreading a blanket on the grass. Is that an issue really of inhibiting its growth in any way? The answer is no.
Okay.
No. That would be similar to what we said before. You're right. If you left that open long enough, it would kill the grass. Is that really coat there? I'm not sure. But it's certainly, you know, most comparable, I think, to shutting off to dropping the blinds so the sun's no longer hitting the plant. That's not a problem.
So if you're outside on a blanket and it's a fall day and the leaves are falling on the blanket.
Right.
On Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Do you just shake them off?
Yep.
When you get up, then that's fine?
Yep.
Okay.
No problemo. Yep. I guess I'm just thinking as you're talking, the more, not very practical, but more complex issue would be what happens if you know, acorns or other seeds start falling on the blanket.
Yeah.
And then you want to rip up the blanket and all the seeds end up in your grass. And those could, one day be a tree. Is that at all a problem of Zareya. It's a good question. You're certainly not intending for it to happen, but is that considered psik resha? Is it, definitely setting up a situation where it could happen?
In that case, you would just leave the blanket.
You could just leave. Certainly, you could just leave it for the shop. Do you have to go that far? I'm not sure. But yeah, but chilling leaves and things like that, not a problem for muksa reasons. For really, for no reason. Okay, other questions? These are great questions.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
How about walking with the shoes?
Yeah, no problem.
So it doesn't matter barefoot or...
Right. Yeah. The Gemara uses that example only with the assumption that the grass might be ripped up by your foot. So then you got, you know, but certainly walking on the grass in general, and you know, you shouldn't go around purposefully kicking the dandelions in Shabbos. That should not be done. You know, great pastime for kids. But no problem. No problem. I also I meant to mention in the beginning, ladies, the question that was asked and then re-asked about the baby monitor. So we discussed it a little bit last week with Rabbi Zelman. I did have the chance to discuss this more fully with Rabbi Kushkerman. So he said basically the same things that we said before, which is audio baby monitor is fine. You're just monitoring the baby. The baby's certainly not, you know, it's a six-month-old, one-year-old, whatever it is, two-year-old. That's not a non-issue with Shabbos. An adult should be careful not to talk in the room and, you know, purposefully start talking. Video, on the other hand, is out because video, by definition, you walk in the room and you're on, you know, you're on candid camera. So one should not use a video. It reminds me of a story Rabbi Hyneman, I think, told us years ago when he visited Russia back in the good old days of the KGB. And he knew that his hotel room was bugged. He didn't talk when he was in his room on Shabbos because it's irrelevant who's listening and why they're listening. And you know, he didn't want to be generating those messages on Shabbos, knowing the mic was going. So again, for a baby, there's no prohibition here at all. But for an adult, one should not.
So if it's a video monitor and you have the ability not to display the video, is that okay on Shabbos? Just to keep the video.
Video running.
No, keep the video off.
Yeah, if you keep the video off, certainly.
Even though it's a video monitor.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, the goal here would be to avoid taking the picture
okay.
in the first place. So if the camera is off, then you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some problems with the camera.
True. That gets a little more complicated. I did see something on that a while ago. They were talking about hospitals and places like that. That's an interesting question because a hospital, you know, you're visiting someone, let's say, so you're not benefiting from the pictures. There they said, you know, don't smile at the security guards, but it's fine. You can walk through. But you're asking a more complicated question. If it's your camera system on Shabbos, so then theoretically there is a benefit. You want it running on Shabbos, that's a bigger problem. Like most security issues, we'd probably say shut it off on Shabbos. And thank God in our community it's not a major, but one suspects there are communities where security and alarm systems and videos and all that unfortunately is a big deal. And if all the neighbors knew, some of the neighbors knew, the Jews shut everything down on Shabbos, that would not be a
good thing.
Yeah, it's sad in the parts of New York. I mean, there's probably parts of the world where that's a real issue. I'm sure that question has been widely discussed, and we should all thank Hashem that we don't have to worry about that. Okay, and Mr. Hashem next Monday in Yerushalayim.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.